Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. I am Connor Dunning, filling in for the big man. I am now joined by Jeff Calkins, columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show from 9 to 11 a.m. on these airwaves every weekday morning. You can find him on Twitter and X at Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm good, Connor.
Before we get into the Memphis Tigers, I do want to recap an awesome Memphis Grizzlies weekend. Right now, they are, you know, they've won 9 of the last 10, and they took down the defending champs, Boston Celtics, this past weekend. I don't really think there's much to take away from the Wizards game other than the bench guys showed up and Santi Aldama continues his leap this season. But against that Celtics team, I do think we can take away the fact that Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant were the best players on the court against the defending champs.
Yeah, it is affirmation that when the Grizzlies have their best players, they are one of the best teams in the league, right? And it is interesting. It's like it was fascinating how many people forgot that heading into this season, right? And maybe even Grizzlies fans sort of were more skeptical of it. But and the truth of the matter is Desmond Bane isn't still playing at peak level, really. I think there's another stratosphere that can be reached there. Jaren is playing as well as he ever has. Ja is spectacular. Ja maybe more in control and surgical, and obviously he was electric against the Celtics. And so and then the other thing is, I think it's worth saying that it was a hell of a game for Taylor Jenkins as well. He toggled with the lineup depending on the flow of the game. Obviously closing with Brandon Clark and Jake LaRavia because Marcus Smart wasn't, you know, playing that well, so he was happy to do that. Marcus Smart obviously maybe overwhelmed by emotion or whatever, the return. And then he also, you know, played John Jaren 34 minutes each, which isn't 38 minutes each, but we've wondered, will he adjust to circumstance, you know, games that needed to be won that require heavier minutes from his stars? He did. Plus, of course, came up with a strategy of leaving Drew Holiday fundamentally open to jack up shots. I thought it was a great game for Taylor. I thought it was a great game for the Grizzlies. Now, if you listen to the Boston side, they'll talk about how it was their, whatever, six game in eight, whatever it was. Like, there's excuses to be made, evidently, on the Boston side of it. But, yeah, I think it's a game that was an eye-opener for a lot of people, including Memphians.
And to your point, the Grizzlies have had John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Desmond Bane in 7 games this season, and they are 6-1 with a 10-point differential in that on the positive side. So it does feel like the biggest factor for the Grizzlies this season, as we kind of expected heading into the season, was health. If they have those three guys on the basketball court, it is very difficult to beat them. Another adjustment that I've noticed from Taylor Jenkins the last few weeks is you are seeing Jake LaRavia closing with John Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Brandon Clark in that lineup. So I think that he's trusting Jake LaRavia because he's a bigger body on the defensive end, and you're getting that first half kind of scoring surge from Jalen Wells. But then when it gets down to crunch time, you're seeing him roll Jake out there.
Yeah, sometimes it's Santi and Marcus, right? But obviously it wasn't against Boston. I think Jake had pretty clearly earned the trust of the coaching staff. And, you know, it's the one thing now, if you were going to do this season over again, you know, they might have picked up his option. You know, he's very clearly You know, whether it is as a trade chip or as a future Grizzly, I think he would have been, you know, I think he would have been worth picking up the option that they didn't, that they neglected to do, because he's been terrific. But it does speak also to the depth of the wings. Like, one of the reasons they didn't pick up the option, seems to me, on Jake is because you would have thought in the pecking order he would be outranked by Vince Williams and Juju Jackson, among others, right? And then we haven't even gotten a chance to see either of them play, and so Jake has been able to ascend. But honestly, the whole thing, like, it's a the way they have selected players, the way they have developed players, the way they have deployed players, it's impressive.
Over the last 10 games, another factor to the Grizzlies' success has been Brandon Clark, and Drew Hill over at the Daily Memphian had a great piece on Brandon Clark and him having to trust his leg again. What have you seen from Brandon Clark over the last 10 games, and why do you think it could have such a major impact for the Grizzlies?
Yeah, it was an interesting piece from Drew. I'd urge people to read it. And it was interesting because he talked about not even just necessarily trusting the Achilles, but it was other parts of his body,
right,
that were then, you know, as he was adjusting to all of this, that, like, there would be, he said at one point he felt like he'd been beaten on all game or something. Like, it was really, and then his knee, for some reason, I guess, you know, the knee bone's connected to the the Achilles bone or whatever, the knee was giving him problems, or was, so it was very clearly an adjustment physically. He also talked about adjusting to the new offense, right? I mean, that's another thing. I think two things are true, though. One is he stopped shooting threes, mm-hmm, right? Early on, we saw him shoot threes, and it was not going well for him, and it just feels like he doesn't anymore. I think that's the right thing. But secondly, he's also playing with Ja, you know? And he is a perfect complement to Ja, and so I think that has helped as well. And given the concerns we had about Brandon as he was having a bit of a rusty reentry at the start of this year, it's been wonderful, just from a personal level, but also from a team building level, to see what he's become. And it does feel a little bit like when Zach Edey comes back, you know, I think he'll still be a useful rotation player. But there was assumption before the year began that he would have to be the starting center. And I think pretty clearly he will come back as a piece of the rotation that they can deploy in certain situations. But I don't expect him to bump Brandon at this point.
That's where I was going to go next. And I tend to agree with you. I think they've really found something with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Brandon Clark, because there's a running joke within Grizzlies fandom that it's death taxes Jaren Jackson Jr., Brandon Clark, plus minus. Like, it's going to be positive every single time. Their net rating together is through the roof. And when you look at Brandon Clark's shot chart, you're exactly correct. I think at one point this season, Brandon Clark was shooting like 8.7% from the three-point, especially the corners. But right now, he's shooting 83.3% around the rim. If you get Brandon Clark the basketball around the rim, he's one of the most efficient scorers in the NBA. Number two and three, you're going to see Santi Aldama and Jay Huff up there as well. They are two and three in bench scores around the rim in the NBA this year. So that depth for the Grizzlies is such an important piece. So that's why I want to ask you. Today, we got some trade rumors out there on social media. You're hearing that Cam Johnson may be available from the Brooklyn Nets, and the Grizzlies may be one of the teams that are in on him. Do you think the Grizzlies need to try to stay patient with guys because the depth has been such a positive for them? Or if it is possible to go get a guy like Cam Johnson, you do it?
No, I think Cam Johnson would be a perfect fit, of course, right? I mean, Cam Johnson is still the kind of player that they've been looking for forever, right? A big wing who can shoot. And he is having a year for the ages. Like, he is absolutely filling it up this year. He's healthier than he has been as well. He's under contract after this year, so wouldn't just be a one-year thing. And he's of an age where he would seem to fit. So, yes, I think there's a reason that people, every Grizzly fan, when you mention Cam Johnson, salivates over the idea of Cam Johnson. The question is, so I don't think it's a matter of being patient or anything else. I think the question is, what are you willing to give up?
Yeah.
You know, are you willing to give up four first-round draft picks plus some collection of salaries or young players to get him? Because it feels like Like I was listening to a podcast earlier where they like, who is the best player who's going to be moved this trade deadline? One of the, it may have been Tim McMahon who said it. He said, I think the best player is going to be made to move this trade deadline is Cam Johnson. Well, you know, we've just seen the price for, you know, big wings of that sort. You know, look to New York and the prices that are paid. You know, it's not going to be a one in some collection of flotsam, you know. It's going to be a stiff price for Cam Johnson. And so, and I don't know for certain, by the way, that the Nets want to move on from him, but it feels like they would. In fact, I've heard some eagerness from net quarters that, like, this is the perfect time to move on from him because he is having such a spectacular year. And because his health has been good. And so this would be the moment to capitalize. But yeah, I mean, Cam Johnson would be terrific for the Grizzlies, no question.
Yeah, his career season is a career season. He's scoring 18 points per game, and he's shooting 43% from three. But yeah, over his last 10, he just has not been missing. He's shooting 51% right from three over his last 10. So could you imagine him being in the corner off of a Ja Morant pick and roll? It just seems like a perfect fit for the Grizzlies. But to your point, when people have been discussing it, they've been saying, well, Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia first. And it's like, great, if that's the deal, absolutely.
What if it's three first?
I'll drive into the airport. Yeah, like I'll help get him there. Or what if they come back and say, we want G.G. Jackson? Is that a price too much for the Memphis Grizzlies? It's going to be interesting to see. But we're going to go ahead and transition into the Memphis Tigers. After a very exciting Maui trip, all of a sudden the Memphis Tigers are 1-2 in their last three games. And I wanted to ask you, have the last three games been warning signs of things to come, or do you think that it's a bit of a Maui hangover combined with looking ahead to the Clemson, Virginia, Mississippi State, Ole Miss stretch?
I'll put Auburn to the side, so then
yeah,
let's
fair
talk
enough
about the
yeah
next two. I mean, here's the truth. We don't know. the way we will know what these two games indicate is someday we will look back at these two games and we will determine what they meant, right? Did they mean this team isn't that good, this team's distracted, this team, you know, whatever? Or did they mean that this team has, you know, it just had a Maui hangover that they had to get over, et cetera? I don't think that this is a sign that this year's team is exactly like last year's team. I think that's wildly negative to say that, because last year's team was characterized by total dysfunction,
right?
Toxic chemistry, a team that hated each other, and a coach that hated the team, right? So I don't think if you're looking at what's happened over the last two games, a close win and then a demoralizing loss, that you can say, they're the exact same as last year, because last year was such an epic disaster, and it was based on internal chemistry issues that I don't see much evidence of that right in this year's team. Having said that, if you can lose to Arkansas State at home, you can lose. I mean, Arkansas State had just lost to Rice. So here what often happens with Memphis fans or whatever, you look at the conference schedule and you say, well, you know, maybe they'll lose two games or maybe they'll lose three games, but you know, they'll go 16-2 or they'll go 15-3 or whatever. Well, Hal, if you can lose to Arkansas State at home, Arkansas State just lost to Rice. You can certainly lose to Rice.
Right.
You know? So I think it speaks to how hard it is to do what these Tigers have to do, which is get up for every game and never slip up against inferior competition. Because I just think that's unless you're just overwhelmingly talented, you have a Derrick Rose on your team, right? Or you're overwhelmingly locked in, I think you're going to lose a bunch of those games. You just are, you know, because someone will get hot. No one got hot against Arkansas State. Arkansas didn't even play that well. They didn't shoot that well. Or you'll have an off night, or you know, that night you'll assume you're going to win. And what it does is it puts a much higher priority on these, an importance on these next four. And so you've got Clemson and Virginia, and then Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Those two schools, those two are home. And I really think, it's incumbent on them to go at least 2-2. If they go 2-2, I think you'll be able to look back at the non-conference schedule and say they did what they had to do. And you can feel pretty good about the team heading into the conference schedule. If they slip and go 1-3, or God forbid, lose them all, then you're looking at, oh my God, you know, then I would really start to worry about this team. And so it's a big test because three of those teams are, you know, top 25 teams.
Right.
And you know, are we going to count on them get the shooting performance that they got in Maui? I think that's one of the, to me, the concern isn't the toxic environment or anything else, which I don't think does exist, but it's who's scoring. And if both of the guards aren't scoring, you know, we had PJ Haggerty scoring against Arkansas State, but Hunter did not have a great game. You sort of need great games from, you know, there's not a lot of firepower on that team, and so there's not a lot of room for error from that perspective.
Final thing for you before I let you go. In the hypothetical loss that the Bills had this past weekend, in the hypothetical game that never happened, and they lost 44-42 against the Rams, it certainly felt like Josh Allen locked up the MVP in that game.
I don't think ever you'd say locked up, just because, you know, they played Detroit this week. It'll be a major, you know, they'll be on a big stage again. He throws three picks, and Saquon Barkley or Lamar or someone goes crazy. So I don't think locked up, but it is interesting, though. Like, his passing numbers are actually not as good as some previous years. Like, it is interesting to me because I've been pounding the table for how fabulous he is for a long time, and this is the year that people are giving him credit for being fabulous. Yes, the turnovers are down, but you did see, I mean, he also has had moments. So he had the moment in the snow, right? Mm-hmm. And he had, he had the six touchdowns. Literally, I gather this is the best fantasy performance ever by a quarterback.
It was, and I happened to be playing him. It was brutal.
Oh, it was brutal.
Kicked me out of the playoffs. I was so excited watching the game. I was watching the game with my dad, and we were like, this is unbelievable. And he asked me, he said, how many fantasy points does he have? And I go, oh, let me look. I opened the app just to be punched right in the face and realized I was playing him, and he had 62 points.
No question, I would like Josh to get an MVP. It would seem to me weird to live in a world where Lamar has three and Josh has none, just because they're not, they're the same. If anything, they're the same level of quarterback. Maybe Josh is the better quarterback, right? So to live in a world where Lamar has three and Josh has none would seem kind of crazy, right? So I would like him to get an MVP. But, of course, what I really want is just one Super Bowl, you know, just one. I don't want the Dan Marino career where you, you know, have all of this greatness and never win a Super Bowl. Now, Marino went to one, lost it very early in his career. But, yeah, you know, he could have the Ben – let Josh have the Ben Roethlisberger career where when Roethlisberger was playing, he was never considered as good as Brady or even as good as Peyton Manning, but he was great. He's a Hall of Famer, and he got a Super Bowl. Josh is – you know, it's a long way to go. It will probably never be considered and certainly should not be now on the same level as Mahomes. But he is a truly epically great quarterback, and it would be wonderful if he could finally get a Super Bowl.
I think most of us are rooting for the Bills just so they can release us from the evil magic of the Kansas City Chiefs. Because them winning this past weekend in that fashion with a doink just felt like they were double birding all of us. Like, come on, just win the game. You don't have to do it that way.
I do wonder who's going to take him down this year. You know, are they finally going to be taken down this year? They've obviously pretty much locked up home field now, though, now that they got the two-game cushion on the Bills. So it feels like it'll have to be through Kansas City. And no, Mahomes hasn't been better than Josh Allen this year.
No.
But the Kansas City defense is better than the Bills defense.
Right.
You know, Chris Jones is better than any defensive tackle, than any player on the Bills defense, you know. And that's a problem. So we'll see.
Well,
sorry about your fantasy outfit, though.
It's okay. It was a rough year for me. I got hit with injuries. I need Gabe to take the show because We've protected the championship belt on the show the last few years. I won it 2 years ago. Gabe won it last year.
Wow.
And he's the only person that can hold off Jason and John. As long as they don't win, I'll be okay. It's almost like the Yankees winning, like being in the World Series. As long as they don't win it, I'm okay.
Man, you're fine.
I'm okay. Thank you, Jeff.
See you, Ken.
That was Jeff Calkins, columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show every morning from 9 to 11 a.m. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Calkins. When we come back, we got to jump into the Blitz. We got to talk Bill Belichick and Monday Night Football. Stick around and listen to Connor Dunning on 99 FM ESPN. Oh, George, just tapping into fifth grade me. Really are the last few weeks. Phenomenal job. Phenomenal job on the music. Every single day on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we got to do the Blitz. Let's do it right now. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Law Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Bill Belichick has agreed in principle to become the next University of North Carolina head football coach. Bill Belichick handed the school a 400-page, quote, organizational Bible. I've also heard the word manifesto used in this, with structure, payment plans, staffing choices, etc. on decisions. On whether to commit with UNC, he's expected to know their decision within 24 hours.
I think manifesto is the correct word to use for what Bill Belichick is doing. I'm also very much enjoying the fact that Bill Belichick agreed to the job and North Carolina has not. I think that's very funny that a head coaching candidate after an interview was like, you know what, I'll take the job. And they were like, we haven't offered you the job yet. We're going to wait and see. But he preemptively accepted the job. Absolute power move from Bill Belichick. But Belichick's Bible would require historic levels of investment from the school, include salary minimum positions by position, and a willingness to hire two staffs, a coaching staff run by Belichick and a recruitment staff run by a sitting college GM, a.k.a. I want to come coach your football team. Ain't no way I'm dealing with this NIL and recruiting.
I mean, in a way, that kind of makes sense.
Well,
if you look at the way that a lot of the other kind of more successful programs in the last couple seasons, especially when it comes to recruiting and transfer portal, that's kind of been the standard. You know, we've seen these general managers get hired by universities and think, what's a GM doing in college football? And then you look at it and you're like, okay, wait, how are these 3, 4, 5, 6 teams doing so well in transfer portal? And you think, okay, wait, it's probably because they have a set coaching staff, they know what they're doing there, and they have other people doing the recruiting and the money work.
It's not a bad idea.
Not at all.
Like, colleges need a GM right now, especially to deal with NIL and everything like that. My issue here lies in, if you just fired Mac Brown because he was too old to deal with the recruiting and he was too old, and you're hiring somebody at the exact same age who has already basically told you, I don't plan on sticking around a long time at North Carolina. Oh, and by the way, you're going to have to overhaul how you operate entirely within your athletic department for me to be here maybe one season. Oh, and by the way, if I lose, my son has to be the head coach in waiting. Just feels like a lot that North Carolina would have to do to bring in Bill Belichick. And listen, I understand it. People would argue he's the greatest football coach we've ever seen. Definitely in the NFL. Overall, I'd put him number two right behind Nick Saban. I get it. But they're already getting pushback from the group of 13 trustees with input from wider faculty. The investment would overhaul the school's approach to football. Belichick, unsure if the school will meet the demands and is unwilling to negotiate. He is unwilling to negotiate. So my question to you, George, is if you are a North Carolina football fan, you just fired Mac Brown, you're looking to go into the future, you were told, we are firing Mac Brown because we need to get younger. We need to bring somebody in here that is ready to deal with the new age of college athletics, which is NIL, transfer portal. That is where you are going to have to be. The bread and the butter of this new coach is going to have to be that. And the first option you are given is Bill Belichick. Yay or nay?
Hard pass.
Hard pass?
Hard pass.
Hard pass. Not just a pass, a hard one.
And for not just that reason, because for one, the NIL reasoning is very valid because, like we just said, you'd have to spend how many millions upon millions of dollars?
Millions and billions.
Even, to rehaul the entire football organizational structure, bring in a general manager, among other things, including other staff changes. We're also talking about a man who has coached only at the NFL level in the past 50 years. College football is a bit of a different game now. We see that. We see a lot of players that do exceptionally well at the college level and struggle heavily at the NFL level. And we also see a lot of coaches do the exact same thing. Who's to say that a lot of what Belichick brings to the table does not translate to the college game.
Bill Belichick went on the Pat McAfee show yesterday to talk about his plan for North Carolina and his plan for a college program. Here's how he laid it out in his own words. So that was a really interesting answer from Bill Belichick there. And I agree with him. His pipeline to the NFL would be unbelievable. He would be able to get guys to the next level. My question to Bill Belichick is, though, is that the priority for every single college kid right now, especially those that would be going to North Carolina? Or is the priority, how much can you pay me? That is the new landscape of college sports. Whether you like it or not, I'm not a fan of it. You've heard me beating the table and yelling about we need contracts and we need a new structure. This Wild Wild West thing isn't sustainable. But if Bill Belichick went to North Carolina and his number one pitch to these recruits and transfer portal guys would be, let me get you to the NFL. I'm going to work your tail off. We're going to be a professional facility. We're going to be held accountable. Oh, and then by the way, we'll make sure you get paid too. They're going to say, my number one priority is to be paid. So even though I think Bill Belichick is one of the greatest coaches we have ever seen, I don't know if I like this fit with North Carolina. I just don't know if I like it. It'd be a lot for them to have to overhaul their entire football philosophy for a chance to have Bill Belichick for a year, maybe two. But we all know as soon as the NFL comes calling again, he's going. So it's a big risk to bring in Bill Belichick in the manifesto he has written.
The Cincinnati Bengals took advantage of Cowboys special teams errors to win in Dallas last night 27-20.
Joe Burrow and the Bengals finally got a break. Playing at an MVP level, Ja'Marr Chase went absolutely insane, but they finally got a break. If you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, though, watching this game, first off, I say it all the time. It's a Ted Lasso quote. It's the hope that kills you. Well, good news, Cowboys fans. Your hope is dead. So that no longer has to torture you because you are now 5-8. I don't think there's any way this team makes it to the playoffs. And now you get to start having real conversations about where this team goes from here. You don't want to be winning football games at this point. You want a better draft pick. Your offensive line had another injury. You had another defensive injury. You're losing guys left and right. Y'all have to head into the offseason with a different mindset. And by y'all, I mean Jerry Jones. It all comes back to Jerry Jones. Is he going to actually be willing to pay guys? Is he actually going to bring back Mike McCarthy after the disaster of the last season and the disaster of last year's playoffs? Is that really what we're going to do?
I have a genuine question that goes along with that. And this is a question for both you and Jerry to that point. After what we've seen now with the last handful of coaches with the Cowboys, who is actually going to be malleable enough to want to go and take that
malleable.
Job?
Malleable. Interesting choice of words there.
That was intentional.
It's because whoever they bring in would have to be willing to give up stuff to Jerry Jones.
Correct.
Is Mike Vrabel going to do that?
Absolutely not.
Probably not. Is Bill Belichick going to do that? Well, if he had a 400-word or 400-page document for North Carolina, what do you think that Cowboys one looks like? 1,000?
I was about to say at least 600.
600 at minimum?
Minimum.
Is number one, Jerry, get the hell out of the locker room? Because it should be.
That's the first 400 pages.
They have a lot of decisions to make here. Mm. And, you know, ultimately this game doesn't matter a ton when it comes to standings or playoff races or even MVP races. Joe Burrow, he's playing at an MVP level, but they're 5-8. They're not going to make the playoffs. Shouldn't make the playoffs. It's sad to see what's happening with him and Ja'Marr Chase because it feels like that duo may be coming to an end depending on what they decide to do this upcoming offseason. But the Cowboys side of it is interesting because they are in no man's land right now. Do you move forward with Mike McCarthy or do you fire him and hire a new coach, which is what you should do? Do you continue to pay the guys you have on your roster now, or do you sell them, be bad for a season with a new coach, and try to revamp from there? Oh, and by the way, still the richest franchise in sports. Could go and get guys to bring him in. Could pay guys. Nope, don't want to do that. What are you going to make? What's the decision with Dak Prescott? What are you going to do? Is he your quarterback of the future, or do you get younger? A lot of decisions for the Dallas Cowboys coming up, but at least they don't have to worry about making the playoffs. Cowboys fans, you can be released from that stretch because you are not making the playoffs. This is a very bad football team. And man, those special team mistakes last night crushed them. But at the end of the day, may have actually been a good thing for you.
We've got the first round of NBA Cup quarterfinals this evening. Magic at Bucks and Mavericks at Thunder. We'll make a couple picks for those two games. And which team should be the favorite to win this year's NBA Cup?
Man, this would be a lot more fun if Franz Wagner wasn't hurt, huh? Even without Paolo, the Magic, you could envision making a bit of a run here. But against the Bucks, I fear they're not going to have enough to get it done because Giannis Antetokounmpo is playing at an unbelievable level right now. He would probably be the MVP if Nikola Jokic wasn't running around dropping 56-point triple-doubles left and right. I mean, Giannis has been insane, and the Bucks have turned it around here a bit. We're going to find out if it's a mirage because of the schedule that they have played, but as I've been saying for the Memphis Grizzlies, good teams beat bad teams. And if the Bucks are going to be a good team, they got to beat the bad team. So I'm not going to hold it against them too much. It is something to keep an eye on, though. I just don't think I don't think the Magic have enough against the Bucks. As much as I want them to, and as much as I respect, did you hear about the team meeting that they had?
I did not.
Jonathan Isaac called the team meeting after the news of Franz came out, and he basically said, "We have to rally around Jalen Suggs." And then what did they do? They went out there and they won a basketball game with Jalen Suggs scoring, I think, 26, 28 points.
Yeah.
Scrappy. Maybe they can get it done. It's going to be a few weeks before we get Paolo back. It's going to be even longer before you get friend Franz Wagner back. You know they have to feel cursed. Like, two? One oblique injury is enough.
Yeah.
That's a baseball injury. We have two oblique injuries in the NBA? Oh, and by the way, Desmond Bane had that injury earlier this season. Very odd. Very odd trend popping up. But on the other side of the bracket, you get Thunder and Mavs. And this game's really interesting because PJ Washington has a chance to do the funniest thing ever. If he went out there and just hit like 6 of 6 from three, that would be fantastic. But if I'm having to pick a favorite to win the NBA Cup right now, I feel like I kind of have to pick the Thunder. I think that it's going to be, if I had to pick right now, I'm going to say it's going to be Thunder Knicks and the championship, which I think would be a big deal for the NBA. You want a big brand in that NBA Cup final.
And then, I mean, think about it like this, too. Storyline, you've got the young up-and-comers in
Absolutely.
OKC. You've got a developed veteran core with Tibbs at the helm.
Hartenstein versus New York.
Oh, yeah, that's there you go.
That'd be big time. The Knicks have really turned it around here of late. They're playing like one of the best teams in the NBA. Karl-Anthony Towns looks like a completely new basketball player.
He's playing defense.
He's playing defense?
He's playing hard defense.
He's playing high IQ basketball? What the hell's going on?
Have you seen some of these ridiculous passes he's pulled off?
Nuts.
It's like one a game where he just pulls off this ridiculous no-look pass from the top of the key.
It's nuts.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. But NBA Cup action tonight should be fun, but we got to go to break because we got to close out this show with small talk. Stick around and listen to Connor Dunning on 99 FM ESPN.